Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by Eric of Cowabunga Comics, and we're going to have a discussion on Eve Valkyrie, numbers 1 through 4, published in 2015 by Dark Horse Comics. Eric, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I am doing good. Now, this book, for me, got what I would consider one of the strongest of recommendations. It's not just a, you know, you might want to read this, but here are copies. Read these. And I want to start by apologizing to you for taking so long to getting around to reading them.
Not a problem. This is something that I read and I absolutely loved when I first read it. And I think it was not too long after that I asked you if you read it and you had said, no, you didn't. And which makes sense. It's not a superhero comic. It's not one of the big two publishers and it's centered around a video game. So it would make sense that it's something that's probably not in your wheelhouse. However, just the way that it was written, how accessible I thought it was, and there is kind of an almost superhero or superhuman aspect to it, I thought might appeal to you. So that was why I actually sent you my copies, which worked out really well because they came out with a hardcover that I have prominently on my bookshelf. But it worked out well that I was able to send you my copies, and now we've got time to read it. So I think all in all, we'll take it as a win.
Yeah, I think so. Now, this series leads into Eve Valkyrie, the virtual reality game.
Right. It was a 2015 VR game, and I'll be straight honest with everybody. When I ordered these single issues and I got it, I had no clue that this was going to be a video game. I either completely missed that in what I was reading in the solicits, or was just so Brian Wood happy that I said, oh, it's Brian Wood, gotta have it, which is pretty much what I do with anything he writes. So I didn't even realize that this was part of a video game thing until the very end, and then all of a sudden something clicked. And I did a web search, and that's where I figured it out. So the fact that I loved it through four issues without even knowing that it tied into a video game universe, I think speaks to, at least for me, how good of a series or how good of a four-issue mini it was.
Well, I would agree with that entirely. After I finished reading this, I did a little research online, a little about Eve Valkyrie. It was, you know, cross-platform VR game. I think it might have even been the first cross-platform VR game. But also that this is part of the Eve Online universe. And I recall, because that started 2003 or something for Eve Online. I mean, quite a while ago.
Sounds right. Somewhere right around there. Yeah, because I was a senior in high school in 2003, 2004, and it was either right then or shortly thereafter where I heard about it. So yeah.
I had some coworkers at the time that were playing it, so I was vaguely aware of it, but I'm not a gamer. So I haven't played Eve Online or Eve Valkyrie and knew nothing of the world. But then after reading this, hitting the Wikipedia page for, I think it was Eve Online, man, that thing just keeps going. It is a fairly big and rich narrative universe or video game universe. Should there be a difference in there? I don't know. But for it to be based on a long-term, you know, standing video game universe, and they've got the narrative of the story of, you know, the setup for the game and all that. And for me to know absolutely none of that and to come into the story and just take it as basically just a sci-fi story, you know, as if it was created whole cloth for the comic, I was pleased with how the story started, how it progressed. It had good hooks at the end of every issue. There was one or two things about the storytelling style I wasn't crazy about. I'm not crazy about the jumping around in time, but it was used well. And I think for this story, it made a lot of sense to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated like how at the beginning they started with, you know, imminent action. You've got this fighter pilot heading into combat with her squad or whatever. And, you know, it takes a couple of pages of okay, let's get ready for this. Let's do this before you really get into the action. And then we flash back and stuff. So it starts in a cinematic way with the promise of great action and stuff. And then, okay, how did we get here?
Right. And it's one of those things where the story gets really immersive really quickly because they do a good job. I watched a few of the videos from 2015 that were kind of promo lead-ins to the game. that were released at, I can't remember what game con it was, but the actual VR and what you saw on the game screen versus what you see in the book, it's fairly similar. There's obviously a more of a hand-drawn approach to a few things in the book, but you've got all of the kind of the pulsar and all of those types of visuals look darn near exactly the same, which is really, really cool. And right away, like you said, it's very cinematic. You're drawn in right away to try and figure out who this character is. And you know, page 4 or 5 or whatever, where it kind of goes into the fact that she has no fear. And that really sets you up for the journey to figure out why doesn't she have any fear.
Yeah, she's definitely established as somebody who is more than willing to take some chances and some crazy chances at that.
Right.
And when we then get the flashback to her childhood and such, it explains kind of that she's both a bit of a natural at this, being a combat pilot and stuff, but also because her father was a famous defense system designer or whatever, she had access to stuff that most kids don't.
Yeah, and it came off very much like a caste system as well. You know, kind of those who are in the upper echelon of the government in this case have access to not only the best education, but early access to some of the things that other people don't. Like, she was being admitted into courses and able to go into labs and stuff like that other kids her age were definitely not allowed to, but because of her superior, or at least her ability to grasp on, I would say her superior intellect, she was able to handle all those situations and excel at them even at her young age.
Well, yeah, she definitely had a natural aptitude for all things, it seemed like, technical, and again, the reflexes and personality or competitiveness for space combat. You know, she's shown at one point early on doing, it looks like, some gymnastics training and stuff, so she's in good physical shape. So she's kind of the best, and there's a certain aspect of really we're following the best of the best. So, well, somebody has to be it, so why not have it be the lead character? Sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
To me, part of what won me over with the character was the bit near the beginning where she introduces herself and, you know, this is my squad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we're going to see this ace pilot with her childhood friends and how they're doing, you know, daring do or whatever. And other than a page or two where she's doing some initial training with them or whatever, I don't think we ever see those kids again.
Nope, we don't.
You know, once things go south for her dad and her life radically changes, it's a defining moment for the character because she's like, you know what? The only person I can rely on is myself.
Right.
And we've already established she's got a competitive edge. We've already established she's incredibly competent at whatever she sets her mind to. So to have it kind of double down on that, you know, I thought was a really strong kind of foundation aspect for the character and explained, well, why did we flash back to this era of her childhood?
Right. It was kind of that, see, I think it was a couple of pages after the gymnastics, but it basically, you know, her father ends up losing his position, essentially, in the government. And because of this caste system, they are thrown out, have to find somewhere else to go. And as she's reacting to it, her reaction in her head is, everyone assumed my father was at fault. Everyone. I learned an important lesson that day, and that was basically that she's on her own. She has to defend herself. That day I lived, and the next, and the next, and the next after that. Right? So she could only trust herself, and I skipped a few things in between there, but there's this internalization of fight or flight, and mm-hmm. She is not a flight. She's a fight. And she's going to make sure she wins, and she's going to make sure she survives. And I think that that's really, as you internalize that about her character, and then what we find out farther on, it's kind of really interesting how it's almost amplified because of some of the things that come out of this.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because I think there's one line that her friend says that put her life on a particular path. You know, when her friend says, you don't know that your father was scapegoated.
Right.
You know, at that point, she's like, well, nobody believes him and stuff. And that, I think, was a polarizing moment for her. And it played well, and I could see why the kid would have said that and all of that. It didn't feel forced or anything.
Correct.
Now, we get to the now point, and we hit the staple or whatever in the first issue. And this goes back to the then and now. I was always getting a little confused as to exactly when the now was and if it kept moving forward. But, I mean, it didn't really matter. And it was clear that with this group of Valkyries and stuff, at the now point, she was very much in charge and kind of calling the shots. And they're space pirates, essentially.
Yeah, essentially they are. They're a lot of, at least what you kind of read into this, is that they are people who have either been cast out of society, escaped for a better life, what have you, and they've kind of assembled together as a means to have their own society. And their society survives by either piracy or smuggling, things like that.
Yeah. Well, and now having established that she's in this situation, we then got to flip back to the then to figure out, well, what led to that?
Right.
And we then see her life on the planet after things have pretty much gone to hell for her family, and how she's on the street doing kind of black market type stuff. And just, again, how radically different the life is, going back to the caste system comment you made and stuff like that. And how she eventually joins the Navy under a false name, not because she has the least bit of respect for them, but to kind of prove to them that she's better than they deserve.
Yeah, and it also as a way to get out of the shadow of the last name that she had, which was her father's last name, and like he was scapegoated. It was kind of a way to try and get in and show that superiority and that dominance, not because she's a superior being in like a monarchy sense, but because her skills, her intellect, her response to scenarios prove that she is the best pilot that they should have.
Yeah, and it was the way out of the situation she was in on the planet, which sucked.
Yep.
So it was kind of, I don't want to say the lesser of two evils, but it kind of made sense.
Yep. Yeah. And she knew that by getting into the Navy and the government, she knew that that was kind of a guaranteed way to make sure that she was going to survive from a food, monetary, whatever standpoint, right? Whereas where she was at was kind of just scamping by. Her dad, you know, essentially ended up in a janitorial position. He was being broken down just emotionally, mentally, and physically. And she didn't want that. She wanted to use her skills for what they were really given to her for, essentially.
Well, and she knew she had the chops to be a fighter pilot.
Exactly.
Because they'd already established in the earlier sequence that her group had like the fourth highest rating on that training simulator. And it was meant for fighter pilots, not kids.
Exactly.
So it made sense. What got me was when she joined the Navy under the false name, it seemed like within a panel or two, they pretty much already knew who she was and that her career was stalling out.
Yep, exactly. Well, I don't think it helped that she didn't change her first name. She just changed her last name. But yeah, they knew who she was right away. And that pretty much put her on a path for, you know, she's useful. Obviously, they see that, but they're not going to let her get any sort of authority.
Yeah. And this is one of the places where I think the storytelling could have been a little clearer, because we're getting told how she's joining the academy. She's going in, she's reporting for induction and stuff. And then it seems like on that page flip where she's getting outfitted with the suit and stuff, time has elapsed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's passed whatever boot camp and stuff, because now the guy is saying, oh, you're not going on a combat mission? It's like, damn, I had the betting pool for you dying today.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, yep. That's harsh.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that she was not liked. Her family name essentially was just kind of holding her back in this case, and she was essentially relegated to training duty.
Yeah, she was on low rung of totem pole. If there was a crap mission to have, she got it.
Yep.
And then this particular one goes south. She gets blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we get that last page reveal of, yeah, but she's not dead.
Right.
And I'm like, this is a good moment, because given the jumping around in time, the killing made for that cool moment with the easy out of, well, she's kind of telling us the story and we've bounced to a now that this is before. So I know she's not dead, but it made for, again, a good hook to end this issue on and to move on to that next one. It's got the what's going on now question.
And a big part of that hook is that she thought she was dead. She didn't realize she was going to come back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. She was surprised and doesn't know what's going on. So there's very much a she's going to find it out as we find it out.
Yep.
So it was a strong first issue. I don't feel it relied on previous knowledge of the video game or anything of the sort. It really kind of set the scene and got us hooked on the character within that issue. So when it comes down to, well, what's going to happen next to her, we care.
Right.
Can't tell you how many stories and stuff they're trying to end on that hook for a character that I haven't grown fond enough to care about.
Right.
You know, so to cover all that ground, I think, is essential to end on this kind of a note.
Yeah, and I guess all that being said, since we're at the end of the first issue, you knew you were going to read all four of them. So that's a kind of a preconceived notion to ask a question there. But I guess what I would like to know is, after reading this first issue, being a book that I may have recommended and you agreed to go ahead and read for the back issue spotlight, what was your thought going into issue two? Were you like, kind of, all right, I really want to see where this is going? Or were you more of the, well, it's all right, let's kind of see. I'm just trying to get a gauge so I know how you responded to it.
I wanted to see where it was going.
Okay.
I was interested enough in the lead character, Ran, and her story because we'd gotten a number of formative moments in her life. We'd gotten to know her fairly well within these pages. So something clearly was going on here, because normally when you blow up in, you know, a dogfight in space, you're dead.
Right.
Here, not so much. So how did she get here? What's going on here? She's in a pod of some sort. It didn't look like an escape pod. So again, was she cloned? Was it a simulation? Did she wake up a la The Matrix? There were a number of ways it could have gone, and I was curious to find out where it was.
Cool. Good.
So I was hooked on the first issue, and the way they handle the start of each subsequent issue, in most cases, there's a little bit of, okay, we switch scenes, maybe it's a little time elapsed. In one or two cases, particularly between 3 and 4, not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you know, again, part of it is the jumping back between the then and the now, because we come back to the now.
Right.
So,
which was where we left off from.
Did we leave off in the then, or I thought we had left off in the past, one of her earlier missions with the Navy, or well, her last mission with the Navy, which I didn't think was the current.
You're right, because we jumped forward really quickly through all the training stuff, and it wasn't an exact now, but it was a future then. I don't know, that's weird to say. But yeah, we are now, and where we left off before was recent past, I think.
Yes, we'd been following. The thing is, we've got her childhood, both on the station and then on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We have the period of time she's in the Navy, and then we've got the period of time when she's first with the Valkyries, and then we've got the now. And really, the Navy and into the Valkyries kind of, you know, one turns into the next.
I think we should mention one thing. I don't know if we did. We're talking about the Navy, but this is in space.
Yes.
This is not on planet Water Navy. This is the Federation, essentially their naval corps is spaceships. So we're out in space for anyone that's listening going, wow, this is, sounds like one heck of a military battle on the water.
Yeah, we should have clarified this. This is space, like the supercarrier we see at the beginning of issue number 2. I'm not going to say it's a Star Wars Star Destroyer, but you can see the similarities. You know what I mean? It's that kind of space navy.
Oh, yeah.
Or space force, as the term might be today.
Yep.
So what I found interesting is when we pick up with her in the now, there's mention of flutters or something. And just through some of the dialogue, we get to, okay, something's going on with the flutters. They mention a rebirth, so I'm guessing it's problems being caused by being cloned into a new body, maybe. And by the time I've got enough to kind of piece this together, they give me kind of the confirmation that these flutters are like degradations in quality from the rebirthing process, kind of like a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy.
Right.
They could be skeletal, muscular, nervous, something like that. And it's, you know, something to look into, because obviously, you know, you're a fighter pilot, you want them in good shape. So I liked how we were given what we were needing to piece it together, but also getting the confirmations and the clarity with that, because it's a fine line. If you don't give enough, it's just exposition.
Right.
Of, I didn't have any clues, you just told it to me. But if you go the other way and you're doing too much show and not enough tell, I've got to kind of guess, and I'm never sure if I'm right. So I think Brian Wood hit kind of that perfect, you know, middle ground of the characters know what they're talking about. I start to get a sense of what they're talking about, and then I get the confirmation that I was on board with where they were at.
Yeah, and I do really like how in this 4-issue miniseries, the distinction between the speech bubble and the thought bubble. Like you can definitely tell the white bubbles are the speech bubbles, and then we have this internal monologue that are in these boxes. And it really helps distinguish, because there's a couple of panels where you'll have the two together, and it really helps you kind of get into her head and stay in her head. And you can, like, when you're in a conversation with somebody, you may be transacting verbally and, you know, exchanging pleasantries, but in your head, you could be thinking of something else. And sometimes in other comics, if the speech bubble is white and the thought bubble is white and all it is a tiny tail that's on one and not on the other, you can kind of get lost depending on what's going on in the background. And so I really liked how these were done, because it really lets you know this is internal. Like, nobody else is hearing this. This is all her. And you really start to get a sense for everything that's going on in her head.
Well, and just for clarifications, these are not thought balloons with the bubble cloud kind of a thing. These are caption boxes, but very clearly her kind of voiceover narration.
Right.
Of what's going on.
Right.
And to me, it's a subtle difference between the way those would have been phrased if they had actually been thought balloons than this kind of narration. Because you could argue, is she doing it in the moment, or is it something after the fact?
Sure. Historical reflection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But either way, getting it from all the story from her perspective, I think is key for this story.
Yeah. And there's some really telling things that, you know, reading it a second or third time, you start to pick up. Like one of those is, I can feel my mind slipping, become a stream of information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first time I read that, I didn't really pick up on what that was. But this time, knowing what the ending is, it's a great clue as to what's happening.
Yeah, there was some stuff that, and we'll get to it when we get to issue 3, that I kind of saw certain things coming, but not in a damn it was telegraphed kind of a way. But because there were enough things like this here to give me the information I needed to see where things could go.
Yeah.
And again, it's a matter of how do you foreshadow without telegraphing, giving, you know, if you're going to have something in a mystery story of the butler did it, you need to introduce the butler.
Right. Without saying he did it.
Now, if the butler's sitting there with an evil look in his eyes and a bloody knife or something, that's telegraphing. We also establish at this point that how she kind of came back from that death at the end of the first issue and how she has been kind of upgraded into better physical shape.
Yes. And well, are you on to the undisclosed Garistas outpost virtuality? Are you in those pages?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Because this is a shift that I think is important to note, and this does give away a little bit of it, but at the end of the first issue, we see her say, or so I thought, that is her being regenerated as we've come to find out. However, when we get to this next part here in the second issue, she's regenerating in a different place and she's being asked to do things differently than she had been before. And then, like you said, she's going through these physical tests and she's outperforming herself from her last regeneration. She's got, you know, better stamina, better breathing, all those different pieces in this physical test.
Is it from her last regeneration or from her Navy evaluation?
I think it's both, because as you read along, this individual she's speaking to, she asks him a question. He says, each time you're getting better.
Interesting.
I have to figure out where it was.
This is one of those places where they bounce around in time enough that I was never totally sure the sequence of a few things.
Yeah, you're kind of in a now talking about then.
Yeah, I was taking these scenes to be picking up kind of on the heels of the first issue of after that initial cloning after her death while she was with the Navy. But not saying I'm 100% right on that either.
Yeah, and the way that I read it and the way that I picked up on it was there was an initial cloning. And I think that there's two clone point distinctions. And I think when we get to some of the latter stuff, I'll tell you how I think, why I'm thinking this is a different clone point. And she's woken up in a different area, laying flat on that table, being examined.
And I can see where you're coming from on that. But yeah, I definitely want to hear how you think the timeline plays out here.
Sure.
When we get to that point. Because I enjoyed the story, but I think the way it was told is open to interpretation as to when certain things happen, such as that initial scene in the first issue of, you know, where does that play into some of these things?
Right.
It's confusion in a way that doesn't detract from the story, which I found interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's something that in the case of what may happen with us is it allows you to kind of debate and almost leaves you kind of going, huh. And now you can start to believe both. And then you almost want to go back and reread it again and see if you can pick up more clues to try and figure out, well, if that's the way that it is, I could see that here. But what about this? And it just kind of, it almost makes you want to reread it a couple more times to figure it out. And I think personally, those are the kinds of books that I like, the ones where I can go back and I can take something out of it after reading it again. Obviously, we all like those books that make us feel good or have some emotion and we read it. But I like things that are meaty and that have something in it that if you go back and read it again, you're picking up more depth, more detail. You're thinking about what you've read in the future that you're now reading again and piecing it together. And it's those kinds of reads are very fulfilling for me because I really feel like I get my money's worth out of it.
Oh, absolutely. I think a story that you can get more out of the second time, even knowing how the story ends, is a good story.
Yep.
You know, it shows it's got some depth to it, that it's not just a surface read and, okay, now that I know the plot, I'm done. There's nothing more to get out of it. I mean, to me, those can be fun. But again, being able to go back and say, okay, now that I know, you know, what happens at the end, how everything plays out, did they set it up? Did they not? Do I still understand it? Do I read it a little differently? You know, that was one of the things I enjoyed with this because I reread it again this afternoon.
Cool.
And it held together. It was as entertaining that second time as it was the first, even knowing kind of how it ended. So I think this was a story, and granted, four-issue miniseries, it's easy to do this with. The story was plotted out before that first issue was released. It's not one of those where they're just winging it. I got to go for four issues.
Right.
There was a game plan to this, and it shows because there's stuff that kind of resonates throughout all four issues.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just as much as we've talked about already, and we're in an issue, not even maybe halfway through the second issue yet, there's a lot of meat on these pages. It's not a done-in-one type story in the sense that if you picked up issue two without issue one, you would be missing some key information about Ran, but it's dense, and there's not a lot of books coming out from mainstream publishers right now that have this level of density that really allow you to get sucked in and take time to read. You know, these are not, you know, five words on a page and splash pages all over the place. There's a considerable amount of detail in the art that you're looking at to try and figure out, like, when she's laying on that table, you've got all those different little scans going across her body, and then you get to the brain scan, and there's the green lines versus the pink and the red, and then you see the DNA strands coming up, and you're kind of trying to figure out what all those clues mean in relation to what they're asking her to do, and so there's a lot of depth here, and I love it. I just love it, and I find these books to be, this kind of book to be something that's really, it holds up. It can stand the test of time in the sense that in 15 years, I could never play Eve, or my daughter, when she's, you know, 20, she'll have probably never played Eve, but she could come and grab this book and she could read it and she could get just as much interesting information out of it as I could my Isaac Asimov or whatever other sci-fi novels I have sitting on the shelf. They stand that test of time.
Yeah, I agree with that because everything we need is on the page here. So it's, again, not other information we need to have from the video game or whatever. And there is a richness of information on these pages without an overwhelming amount of text. I mean, there are some pages that are heavier on text than others, absolutely. But many of them are surprisingly spartan with the text, yet there's a lot going on in that the text that it does have.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you a lot to kind of chew on and stuff, and that's the part I appreciated about this. It's not a matter of... I never felt there was a huge info dump being thrown my way.
Right, right.
I felt that with every line of dialogue, every caption, there was usually something I could get out of that if I really thought about it or whatever, or it would build on another thing later or whatever. So there was a steady flow of information, but not just this fire hose of here's the situation, here's why people are fighting, here's what's going on, you know, info, info, info kind of a thing.
Right. So I guess getting back to the book,
mm-hmm.
Do we want to, I don't know how spoilery you want to get on this. I know we are going to talk about plot points and, you know, the main character. Do we want to talk about this this gentleman that comes in and kind of give that away, or do you want to hold some of that back?
I can go either way. I don't want to, on the one hand, I don't want to spoil the ending because I do think this is something people really ought to read.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there's certain parts that get hard to talk about if we don't give a few things away. Which way do you want to go?
I think we, to make the discussion actually fruitful, we'll probably have to talk a little bit about what he's done. Maybe we'll leave the who he is and the how he got to where he is for the readers to go find. But we'll just say that the individual that she meets in this new cloning chamber has found a new way to clone or recreate a dead soldier, a dead person, a dead pilot in this case, and do so without the flutters, right? Without losing any of the mobility, the agility, things like that. In fact, he's found a way to make each subsequent clone stronger in the sense that not only physically can he tune up how they come back, but I think more importantly, and where I was completely missing this and now makes total sense in a video game, you die when you're playing a video game, you come back smarter the next time because you know where the enemy is going to be, you know how they're going to respond, or you know what weapon you have to use. So in that respect, this makes total sense in the video game world of, you know, you may come back a little bit better physically, but you're definitely going to come back better mentally and be better prepared.
Well, it's kind of a twist on, I don't want to say Groundhog Day or what was it, Edge of Tomorrow, whatever the Tom Cruise one that was based on the manga or whatever. It's not like you're reliving the same events, but because this guy has figured out how to get the cloning tech working and has a military application for it, it takes that video game aspect of I die, okay, I respawn, and says, how would that play out for the individual in the game, not the player?
Right, right. The character. And I do think it's really interesting how she leaves the government in that upper caste system and goes to the next, this planet where she's basically just a scrounger and a thief and, you know, doing black market work, goes back into the Navy. And now all of a sudden she's being cloned by this guy who basically has Navy tech, but he's not working for the Navy.
No, he's basically gone from military contractor to kind of we're on our own. And it was never really explained what happened for him to make that transition. Because when they're doing that walk in the spacesuits or whatever, he makes an allusion to, you know, something had happened.
It's the page right before the spacesuits, top right panel.
Uh-huh.
First, the speech bubble that starts with, but here is, basically his tech failed him and he was lost.
Right. But there was a line a page or two later that he was doing a military contractor and a fluke of fate, pure bad luck. And that's what kind of led to where he's at now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never quite clear what that was.
I think what this is supposed to be is these couple of pages are almost an exact replay of Rand's childhood to this new desolate planet that she's on, that she has to go into the black market. Her dad, we kind of get a little bit of information as to why he was cast out, but not really too much, just something failed. Very similar to this other person, his thing failed. And the difference was Rand's father and Rand were both physically there and sent out. You have to leave this area. Whereas this guy was literally, that was the failures. He was out and was just kind of left. And so both of them were in this similar case of, we've both been abandoned by the system that was supposed to take care of us, that we've given our life and our intellect to.
Yeah, and I can definitely understand his sales pitch, particularly for Ran, knowing her backstory of, do you really want to go back to the Navy, or
yeah,
can I offer you a different path?
Right.
So it was another kind of both father figure and, you know, we needed somebody to have set up all of this stuff for her to have this path open up for her. So it was, again, another major turning point in her life with all of this going on. And I found it interesting of, they wanted her as the perfect pilot. You know, here's your new ship. We want you to work for us. And the first thing she does is spend a week or two basically tearing the thing apart and rebuilding it to kind of her satisfaction.
Right. Making it better and faster. And essentially what they did to her body, she did to the ship.
Mm-hmm. And that felt natural to me, given as a child she had been studying these sorts of ships, been, you know, flying them in simulators. She knew these things inside and out. It's not the least bit surprising she was thinking, oh, you could make some improvements here.
Right, right.
So it's not something that I felt was telegraphed, but I felt was set up, and I appreciated that. It then gets to a point where, through an admittedly unexplained plot device, where she comes across some information.
Mm-hmm.
She goes through another status quo kind of change, this one of her doing, and kind of explaining how it went from one guy being in one position to her being in another position. Again, don't want to give too much away there, but the way it all played out made sense, surprised me a little bit, but I appreciated how they had a few lines in the last panel to kind of, you know, give us a sense of story's not over yet, you know?
Right.
It wasn't a bait and switch that we could have had of, well, look what we did here, and then kind of rewind and it turned out a little differently next issue.
Yeah, agreed.
When we get to the third issue, we wind up with them, you know, it's like, okay, we've got expenses. We've gotta keep these ships flying, gotta feed the crew, that kind of stuff. And start getting a little explanation on the mining in this world and, you know, how they pay their rent, if you will.
Right.
And it's funny because there's arguably a page of exposition on the mining and stuff, but it didn't feel like the info dump it kind of was. It was just, here's the context of the mission they're about to go on.
Yep.
And if they had skipped that, I would have, well, why are they here? Why are they doing this?
Right, right. Because their mission was to essentially disrupt this production system.
Mm-hmm. And then their disruption gets disrupted by the unknown.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, that's a little vague. But by this point, I was already wondering, based on the very few clues we got about the unknown, I had a theory as to who they were and how, not how things would play out, but again, a sense of why this could be a very formidable adversary for the Valkyries.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she dies and regenerates again. And now we're back in the kind of the main hangar of where the Valkyries come out of with their ships. And it's basically that time-tested age-old discussion of you can't blow everything up. We're running out of stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can regenerate, but we can't regenerate the ships.
Which is why they've got to keep making money and stuff. They're going through things.
Yep.
I had lost track by this point of how many times we'd seen her die.
We're up to probably 5, 6, something like that.
At least. Well, it was seeming like at the end of every issue.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because almost every single one has those two lines of that deafening roar, the burn, the needle in my skull, then black silence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a commonly reused thing where it's kind of like that's she's actually telling you, like, you know, I may be a regenerated thing, but I still feel.
Yes. Yes.
Which I think is really important because that in the case of a video game, right, you can be very disconnected from the character that you're controlling because it's literally just ones and zeros. It doesn't live. And in this case, you are seeing that even though she's a character in a video game, she still has feelings, right? She still feels the pain. She still feels everything that happens. It's just she processes it very differently. She doesn't have fear because she knows she's coming back. So she can take a risk.
Well, and if you realize that they're taking that respawning aspect of a video game and turning it into a very kind of character-centric storyline here, again, that's, you know, I enjoyed that aspect of it. It took something that's just, well, it works in the game. I guess we got to put it here. And the whole story hinges around this aspect. And there's multiple ways they could have gone. You know, they could have done the whole questioning, am I alive? Am I, you know, do I have a soul kind of a thing or
mm-hmm.
sense of identity or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's also just an aspect of she gets told a couple of times, don't use this as a get out of jail free card sort of thing.
Right. There's a cost to it.
I mean, the lesson doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
She very clearly knows that since they can bring her back, that takes her already kind of crazy skill level and gives her a couple of more options on the table than she would have had otherwise. So I don't know how much we want to go into what they do with the unknown and stuff like that. But to me, I thought they had done enough foreshadowing throughout the story that, again, I was able to come up with a theory and stuff. And I'm not going to say I nailed every aspect. No, certainly not. But as it was getting revealed, as certain things were happening, it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense to me. That feels like how it should have played out.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of a natural story progression, to me, again, sign of good writing.
Yeah, and I think, so the first time I read this, I didn't pick up on it, but in subsequent readings, I picked up on it. When we're looking at kind of those battle scenes and we're going back and forth between the pilots,
mm-hmm.
and you notice Ran has the cutout, you can see her nose and her mouth, but the other pilot has the full shield. And you look at the other pilot, you see the red scarf.
Yeah.
If you go back to issue one, you will see that red scarf around that person's neck.
I am doing that now.
And that's, I didn't notice that the first time. It's on, or is it, maybe it's issue two? No, it's right after the scene with the kids, with her squad. Then they're on the flight going off to the desolate planet. Then there's the now, that day I lived, and the next day, and the next after that. The next page, if you look at the third panel down, it should be a full width panel, and you see someone with yeah. white hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Pointing in that red scarf. And I didn't notice that the first time, but going back, and I was like, okay, and that's where my theory comes from.
Interesting.
With how it all plays out and how, yeah.
I hadn't picked up on that. I had just thought that enough other breadcrumbs were left in the story that, to me, the fact that they didn't know how the unknown was operating, how they were finding them, and a few things like that.
Yeah.
Made me wonder a couple of things.
Yeah, so I picked up on some of those exact same breadcrumbs. It wasn't until subsequent readings, though, where I started figuring out, like, hey, wait a minute, there's an Easter egg here that is important to note.
There were a few times where we've got enough of these ships out there and stuff, it's easy for me to lose track of, wait, who's who again? Because I'm not deep enough into this video game universe by any stretch to recognize which side has which ships or something. But again, that didn't detract from the story at all.
And it's kind of like the Star Wars thing where you have, you know, the Empire has the red laser cannons and the green is usually from the good side. And now here you've got kind of a bluish white and a yellow and you just have to figure out who's shooting what.
Yeah, I think it's wise when you have these sorts of combat things to have each side have distinctive color weaponry.
Yeah.
It's just so you can tell them apart.
Yep.
This is the issue, though, that ended on a note that we pick up right on the heels of. Matter of fact, I think the last page, we even get a line of dialogue kind of repeated on the first page of issue 4.
And I've got to try and figure out where it ends, because I've got the hardcover and they didn't do like straight up chapter split. So did it end on a full page splash? Yes, it did. Okay, got it.
Ended on a full page splash of you don't understand.
Yep.
And I'm like, I think I might.
Or at least you understand who and what. It's just maybe the question of how and when.
Well, and what's interesting is between that splash page and that first panel, it's like we do almost a 180 on the camera position.
Yes, exactly.
Which was interesting, but there were also a few times in this I started to get a little, because there's a lot going on here, a little lost as to when certain things were happening or whatever. Because we also get another flashback to her childhood, filling in some of the gaps from the first issue.
Yep. Yeah, and it can be tough because you don't know, how do I say without giving anything away?
You don't know the ordering of some of these events.
Yes. 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 And when they're being shared.
Yeah, I think if you were to remaster this to put it into a straight timeline to where there's not this then now jumping back and forth, there are possibly a few different orderings you could go with, because it's not 100% clear, and that lack of clarity is not problematic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, again, open to some interpretation. And again, it shows some aspects of the character of Ran that makes sense, but that we just hadn't seen before.
Right.
And what's interesting is, now I was almost thinking they had reused a page between the two, and they had not. It's just a very similar layout between one of the images between the two issues. And again, there's a lot of information on these pages, and it's still, in some pages, surprisingly sparse of text.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wanting to see this as like a Netflix movie or something like that, because I think they've got a really strong story here. I think the space battle visuals would be fun. I think the lead character is good, and I think it is a strong story.
Yeah, and I love the ending too. Not even quite the ending, just that, yeah. There's just some lines in here where it really humanizes the whole video game experience in ways that you wouldn't expect, quite honestly.
Yeah, it makes you look at, again, the whole concept of the respawning and some of the mechanics of a video game a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that aspect. What I couldn't tell, though, is the time frame when things leave off versus the time frame of those first few pages of the first issue. Did we hit full circle? Did we not? Again, the then and the now got a little unclear for me in a few places, not in a way that detracted from the story at all, but again, I think it's open to a little interpretation.
Yeah, and I don't think we ever came full circle, because I think that first couple of pages in the first issue were really just to set the overall tone of what's going on and the overall mindset of Ran, you know, that I did not fear it. And that kind of really plays out throughout the book. And then at the end, we kind of really figure out how and who she is.
Yeah, I think that they didn't need to come back to that specific. It's not like some movies where they start with the climatic action, spend the hour and a half getting back to it, and then, okay, this is where we picked up, you know, we started, and okay, let's go from there for the final few minutes or something. I didn't feel they needed to do that, because I felt, again, that first scene, to your point, set the tone, the style, and establish the character. That's the purpose of it. And it did that well. So I wasn't needing or expecting them to kind of land back on that moment at the end.
So overall, what would you give these four issues for a letter grade?
They'd be up in the A category, definitely. I thought it was a solid read. I felt they had... the art was good. It was better in some places than others. The look of the ships and the tech was great. It told the story well, so I was happy with the art. The story, I didn't feel the least bit left out, because I didn't know anything of the games or anything. I think this works well as a standalone story. A caveat of, I'm not crazy of the jumping back and forth in time, but I've mentioned that a few points. I think it fits it fits the story. I understand why it was done, and I don't necessarily think it should have been changed, particularly for something serialized across four issues. Had it been an original graphic novel, I might have felt a little more that, okay, you should have told it in a little bit more of a linear storytelling style. But I think this falls in that category of kind of space military type stuff that I enjoy. It's a very different take than, say, the Lost Fleet novels that my sister and I have read and such. But we've got a clear focal character, a good viewpoint. And again, if they were to adapt this into a, you know, like a Netflix movie or something, I'd absolutely check it out, knowing the story and stuff, because it was entertaining. It was good. So yeah, definitely A material.
Yeah, I almost feel like they could do, I don't know, 4 1-hour, you know, movies or 45-minute episodes, because there's so much depth that they could go into farther. And I think if they were to expand some of that then, now, back and forth on the screen and play it out a little bit more and give you a few more distinctive differences, that, you know, it would probably become a lot clearer. But for me, yeah, this book was, I don't know what made me get it in the first place. I think, like I said, it was probably just because of Brian Wood. I really like a lot of what Brian Wood does. He's a guy that has his own original material, obviously DMZ and Sword Daughters going on right now. But he's also a guy that gets dropped into the middle of licensed products. And you have to stop and think, like this, like you said, is a well-scripted story. But I would assume that since the video game that this was leading into did not exist, I don't know, maybe Brian Wood's a huge Eve fan and was playing Eve. But, you know, either way, even coming into a storyboarded scenario and having to put words to something and whatnot, I still think he did a phenomenal job. There's no lead-in material from a comic standpoint. It's a new game. And this, I think, was used as a way to kind of provide some backstory for the game that wasn't maybe involved in some of the intro video splash kind of stuff as you get booted up and your character's created and whatnot. So I thought that was really impressive. For me, this is an A, obviously. I wouldn't have tried to get you to read it if it wasn't. And, you know, I think that really speaks to how good of a product it is when, you know, it's got enough tones of things that I know you like, obviously kind of that superhero type feel in the case that she's can't die almost. She can, but she comes back. Sci-fi, obviously, I know you like. And I thought it was so well written that it was, you know, easy enough for you to adapt to, and really not a lot of gory violence. Just there was one panel, I think, that had a little bit of a shot through someone. But, you know, other than that, I just thought, gosh, this is really good. And so for me, if I can recommend it, if I can recommend it to a person who reads a lot of comics and they like it, that says all it needs to say, in my opinion. The one thing I think is really interesting to talk about, though, is that I don't know how long it's been going on in manga, but the idea of taking video game characters and creating stories around them is something that has existed for a number of years. One of the manga that I read or have been reading is Grimgar Fantasy and Ash, and that's a book where you are basically watching people that become characters in like a Final Fantasy game or something like that, where you start at level zero and you have to work your way up, and there's a cost to fights. There's, you know, and you grow as a squad and you start to learn and know each other. And I found that actually, if the story's done well, it's very engaging and similar to this, where you're humanizing the characters. They have feelings. You're inside their heads. You can understand why they may feel or think the way they do. You kind of get the aspect of teamwork. You know, I played a lot of Halo. That was the one video game. Halo and Halo 2 were the video games that I played the most outside of Super Nintendo and Nintendo. And, you know, as you play with friends, as you grow in the game, there is kind of that aspect of camaraderie. But to take it from the player side and put it down at the actual character side, I just think is really cool. So yeah, this book for me is top marks. I'm glad you liked it. That makes me very happy to hear. And I do hope that people out there, if you have any passing interest in sci-fi, anything that we talked about sounds good. If you like a real nice twist on a story, I think this book is a book that you should check out, whether it's at the library, pick it up yourself. You know, I think it's a quality read.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's something that if somebody walks into a comic store that's a video gamer looking for something to read, this is an obvious choice for them. If you've got somebody who's a sci-fi fan or doesn't want, you know, the superheroics and stuff, this is a solid pick too. One comment, though, you'd made about the teamwork and the Halo games and that kind of a stuff. What I found fascinating about this is she's clearly working with a squad of other pilots, but this is essentially her story. I don't even know that we ever get the names of any of the other pilots.
Right. And I don't think we do. And I think that's where, you know, for me, where I was coming from, if they could find a way to turn this into like a 45 minute long serialized show, you could really add some of that stuff. And you could make it go a lot longer if you wanted to start adding some of that stuff in. Because there's a couple of key panels where they talk about, you know, why was she selected and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe others. And to build, you could really build a very rich universe around that. This is definitely some IP that is, I would think, rife for being able to convert into something beyond a video game. But I will admit, I have not played Eve. I have not played Eve Valkyrie. So I don't know where the product is at now, you know, what it looks like, what all they've done with it. All I know is I've got this book and I really liked it.
Well, the funny thing is, if they were to do this, say it's like a Netflix series or something, they could start with Rand's story, establish the universe, the Valkyries, all that kind of a stuff, and then do an arc on some other pilot, and then do an arc on some other pilot. They could essentially kind of turn it into an anthology. You know, if you figure every one of these other pilots has potentially a similarly interesting backstory as she does, that could be a lot of fun.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it's really important to note, too, with Brian Wood is that he's done some really great stuff with other licensed properties like this with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was really the engine for a lot of those Star Wars stories that people really loved when they were with Dark Horse. I think it's just part of how he writes. I don't know. Maybe not everybody likes his writing, but I really haven't found a lot of duds. I seem to get really engrossed in them. And this is one of those ones where that it just gives you more questions in a good way, right? They're not like the, well, how's that possible? How did that work? They're not like plot hole questions. They're, boy, whoa, what if he looked at this or did that? You know, it gets really big.
There were one or two places here where I thought there was, the character got some information just inexplicably.
Like that glowing orange thing in the dark?
Yeah, a few things like that. So, but that's something that if they were to do another miniseries on one of the other pilots, maybe the other pilot knew, maybe that, you know, they could use that to interconnect some stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was something that while there were some contrivances of, well, how did she discover that there? How did they discover who she was? You know, a few things that just kind of happen. It wasn't to the point of, oh, come on, the entire story hinged around that and it's ridiculous. It's not like the Martha moment in Superman versus Batman or whatever.
Groan.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things of it's just going to happen. Live with it. So I'd like to see more with this. I definitely think that just as a sci-fi story, it was very solid. I'm really curious how much of this was handed to Brian Wood with the assignment of here's the backstory, tell this story, or how much he brought to the table in addition just to the execution, but to the tone, the style, the character, all of that. Because it could go either way, and regardless of which way it went, he did a great job, particularly if it's a here's the story beats you got to go hit, go tell a compelling story. Because he did.
Because
I've got to imagine the video game company had built up some of the backstory and whatnot as to how involved he was with that. That's just the part I'm curious about. So definitely recommend this. Definitely glad you recommended it to me. Enjoyed reading it and think it is something people really ought to check out.
Awesome.
So anything else?
I think that's it.
Cool. And a quick reminder that the Preview Spotlight 153 covering the August 2020 previews, the deadline for that episode is Saturday morning, August 8th, 2020. And it's basically as early as I get up that morning. If you need a little more time, just email me and let me know. There's a place to subscribe to the Preview Spotlight reminder emails on the front page of the comicbookpage.com website. These episodes have an open submission policy, and that means if you don't send in a clip, we're not probably going to spotlight that item. So please send in clips as often as you can. It's a great, fun way to share your love of comics and to help the other listeners know about the comics you enjoy. That hopefully will beef up the sales, keep those titles around, and give you more people to talk about those titles. So once again, the Preview Spotlight 153 covering the August 2020 previews. The deadline for that episode is that Saturday morning, August 8th of 2020. And a quick reminder that we've also got the Recommendation Roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something, let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books. Anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting like the streaming services and stuff like that on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love. Join us next week as James and I talk about Avengers the Contest, covering West Coast Avengers Annual No. 2 and Avengers Annual No. 16. And then join us the following week for the first monthly comics spotlight. James and I will be discussing all the comics we got in July and what we thought of them. And then the following week, Sam and I will be back with Squadron Supreme issues 7 through 12. We did actually already record that issue, but we had some technical problems. We're going to have to re-record it, which is why this episode was Eve Valkyrie with Eric.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.